Law and order is breaking down all around us as mob rule and rioting reigns in our nation's cities and streets. Today, we'll look at how Marxist revolutionaries intentionally seek to divide the people in this episode of Anarchy and America with Christian Gomez. Here in America, we've become accustomed to associating such violent protests with other, less developed, and less stable countries overseas, where rampant corruption and ruling dictators may justify legitimate grievances and protests on the part of the people. Certainly not here in America, with our constitutional system of checks and balances and our God-given individual rights as secured by the Bill of Rights. But one thing that we have to understand is that America, the United States that is the ultimate prize for those who would seek world revolution. And just as America is under siege, so is the rest of the free world. But whether there or here, we see the same pattern and strategy for revolution in play. Today, we're going to interview two expert guests about the turmoil occurring throughout Latin America and Chile, where Marxist agitators and the socialist and communist parties have succeeded in dividing the people, which is the first step in communist strategy for takeover. I'm with Professor Carlos Casanova in Chile, who experienced firsthand the communist takeover of his home country of Venezuela and seeing it unfold right now in Chile. Carlos, based off of your experiences, for your study of Marxism, how have the Marxists and the communists divided the populations throughout Latin America, such as in places like in Cuba?
Well, thank you for the invitation. That's a very important question. Marxism has that as a strategy, like ingrained in the very essence of its ideological structure. Marx already in the Communist Manifesto and in other works says that you have to find any division to solve internal strife. And Lenin, who was a good disciple of Marx and the founder of the Soviet Union, stated that very well in an important work called Left-Wing Communism and Infantile Disorder. He says, the more powerful enemy can be vanquished only by exerting the utmost effort and by the most thorough, careful, attentive, skillful, and obligatory use of any, even the smallest rift between the enemies, any conflict of interest among the bourgeoisie of the various countries and among the various groups of or types of bourgeoisie within the various countries. Those who do not understand this reveal a failure to understand even the smallest grain of Marxism, of modern scientific socialism in general. So this has been the strategy of the communists, and this quote reveals the very essence of Marxism. They use the mask of science, the mask of social justice, but really their essence is the destruction of society and violence. That's what they do.
And how about in Cuba?
Well, in Cuba, the situation was very special because the whole country was against Batista's dictatorship in 1959 or 58. So the unions and the professional associations and the whole people like overthrew Batista. And then Castro just took the chance that he had his armed men to seize power. And after he seized power, he just destroyed. In the beginning, he lied. He said that he was not a communist. But as soon as he had the power secured, then he just destroyed anybody who was not a communist. And also those who were more decent about his comrades in arms like Camilo Cienfuegos. That's what he did in Cuba.
Now, Carlos, you saw the communists and the Marxists take power in Venezuela with Hugo Chavez. So how exactly did they achieve that?
Well, there the strategy can be seen more clearly because a division had appeared in Venezuela in the beginning of the 90s due to an ideological application of capitalism. And then some years later, Chavez and his movement took that division and stuck a wedge between the social fabrics of Venezuela. So he sowed envy, he sowed anger, the desire for revenge. I remember in 1998 or 1999 speaking to a worker at my university, and he said, I know that Chavez is going to destroy everything, but at least he's going to bring down the well-to-do, and we all are going to suffer. What he didn't know is that the guys who suffered most were the poorest, because the ones that were well-to-do, some were killed, that's true, but the majority just emigrated, while the poorest had to remain, and they have been massively killed by the communists, because they behave, the communists, as a new elite that establishes the greatest inequality ever seen in the history of mankind. And they are an elite that is totalitarian, and for that reason behaves as a foreign conqueror, as Hannah Arendt used to say. And they are allied to globalist powers. What they want is to destroy their country. They hate their country. This is a trace of Marxism that has been pointed out by their intelligent victims, like Alexander Solzhenitsyn and Igor Safarevich. So they really care nothing about the good of the people. They just care about power and destruction, really.
So now that you've fled Venezuela and now you're in Chile, of course, now the same thing we see happening in Chile. So how exactly are the Marxists and the communists dividing the people in Chile right now?
Yeah, the Chilean case is very very interesting and important for the U.S. because what they are doing here is producing, like, causing a racial divide. They are trying to enlist the Mapuches into the revolution.
And the Mapuche are an indigenous people in Chile?
Exactly. They are an indigenous people that lives south of the Biobío mostly. So, in the southern part of the country, but all the other indigenous peoples were incorporated into the Chilean race, really. Chileans are mestizos. The Mapuches remain independent until the 19th century, but slowly they mingle with Chile too during the centuries of Spanish power and in the Republican time. And when they were conquered, they very proudly came to integrate the Chilean society, and they have fought the Chilean wars, and they have contributed to the Chilean common good. This division is completely artificial that the Marxists are creating in the Araucanía. But through violence and through propaganda, they are succeeding aligning some of the Mapuches in the revolution, even though many are opposed, but those are many times killed or threatened. So they succeed in giving the impression of a racial divide in Chile. What Marxists also have done in Chile is they have tried to create social division, but since the system was well thought by Jaime Guzmán, in a way that everybody profited from the system.
He was an advisor to President Pinochet, Augusto Pinochet, right?
Pinochet. Yes, he was a civilian, a very good man, who was killed by the communists in 1991. But he succeeded in creating a system that in which everybody profited, so the Marxists have tried to disrupt the system so that there can be also a social division in those lines, economical. And finally, since that is not very massive in Chile, what they have done is they, through gender ideology, they have created an army of young people who are ideologized with gender ideology and who think that they are fighting for sexual minorities. And in that way, they become the revolutionary army in Chile. That has been their strategy in Chile.
That's a lot like the LGBTQ movement we have in the United States, which has been highly radicalized by the left. So in Chile, you mentioned the racial division with the Mapuche tribe, the economic division, pitting rich against poor, poor against rich. And of course, you're mentioning the gender ideology revolution. Now, how does that relate, in your estimation, to what's happening right now in the United States?
Well, I think that it's very similar, the strategy that they have used in Chile and the strategy they are using in the U.S. In the U.S., they are trying to create division between the African-American population and the rest of the population. They are trying to say that there is a systemic racism in the U.S., which is, I think, ridiculous right now. They are doing it through Black Lives Matter, this movement, which couldn't care less about Black lives, really, because they promote abortion, they promote the destruction of the nuclear family. They are just communists. So I am sure if they came to power, the Black population will suffer quite a bit.
No, absolutely. Yes. Well, yes. Thank you so much, Carlos, for joining us and explaining the situation and relating what's going on in Latin America to what's happening right now in the United States. We hope to have you, of course, on again in the future.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Now we have with us Leah Southwell, an American that was living down in Chile. Leah, thank you for joining us today.
having me.
So, Leah, you were an American, of course, living down in Chile. Now, this was a relatively prosperous country with a prosperous economy. What happened in Chile, and what's behind a lot of this unrest that's been in the international news about Chile?
Well, it had been prospering, and I thought that life was doing very well. The Chileans who I met all said you just wouldn't recognize this country from 20 years ago. It's improved so much. Our life has become so much better. And then suddenly in October, riots broke out overnight where they attacked the subway system. 70 of the stations were attacked. Buses were being burned. The police were out in force. The state of emergency was called. The military was called out because obviously nobody knew exactly what was happening.
Who was attacking?
That was the question, and I'm still not sure who really was behind it. The instigation was that for a few days before, students had been protesting because the metro ticket, the subway system ticket, went up by 4 cents. And so the students had been at the train stations and complaining about it and causing some rioting, jumping over the turnstiles. And then that day started actually breaking down the subway system. These were mostly high school students. And then by that night, it appeared like the whole city was involved or some serious troublemakers were involved where they were setting fire and total destruction to these subway systems. And that just started, once the police came out, then the people came out and started rioting stores and burning stores and all hell broke loose.
So did you have any one-on-one contact with any of these agitators in the streets?
I did. There were 2 days that the protests came to my neighborhood, and they were planning on attacking the big shopping mall, a 70-story tall building near just a couple blocks away from my house. And so I went out to defend my neighborhood and to try to chase them out and found them confronting the police just around the block from my house. And I don't know, the mama bear and me came out and I found the loudest agitator and went in front of him and said, "What do you think you're going to accomplish by burning down your own city?" And he said, "You don't understand, lady." And I said, "What don't I understand?" He said, "This is a revolution. We need to burn it down before we can rebuild it."
So, did you observe any Marxist or communist agitation? Now, Chile, in the country's National Congress here, they have members that are elected of the Socialist Party and even the Communist Party of Chile. What's been their role throughout this unrest in Chile, and have they been fanning the flames of revolution down there?
They had been allowed to come back to Chile because they had been banned for about 20 years. They were banned from Chile, so they were let back in again and allowed to participate in the political process. But they never had much power until the last time that President Bachelet was in office. In order to gain power, she had to work together with the Socialists and the Communist Party. So they started to gain a little bit more power. I didn't think that this was obvious communistic, but when you look at how communist revolutions happen, it all met the pattern. I think that I couldn't see it very well because it appeared that the mass of population was in support of all this.
And the communists, they just sort of fed off of the turmoil that was already there, the strife that there was already, and use it to their advantage. So what has been the response of the supposedly conservative-leaning Piñera government and the police in Chile? Have the police been targeted by the anarchist, Marxist, street protesters, and even some of the socialist politicians? How have the police responded to all this as well?
Absolutely. Well, because this was a ferocious and sudden attack, I think that the President Piñera believed that this was a terrorist attack, and he brought out his military and the police to fight this. But that only lasted 10 days before he had to withdraw the military because the people were so against the military being used against them. They thought this was a people's movement and did not agree with the police being brought out against them.
A people's movement like the People's Liberation Army of China or People's Republic?
I think the people just thought that there was a whole lot of injustices, and this was a moment to declare their complaints and to correct all the injustices that existed. So the military withdrew within 10 days, then the police were left to deal with this. And this was ongoing battles every single day. Then the objection came that too many people were being injured by the rubber bullets that the police were using. And so the rubber bullets were banned. It was said that human rights violations were being committed by using the rubber bullets.
And the head of the Human Rights Commission is, of course, former Chilean Socialist President Bachelet.
Yes, exactly. And so she went around the world telling everybody that the current president was committing serious human rights violations by using rubber bullets and tear gas against the people. And so eventually the rubber bullets were banned and the tear gas was banned, and all the police were left with was water cannons to fight back.
So right now you're in America, you know, you're safely here in the United States. Now you've left Chile, the turmoil, the flames that have engulfed Santiago, so to speak, and now you're here and America's in flames. How does what you see now unfolding in the U.S. relate to what you saw in Chile? Do you feel that the revolution has just followed you now into America?
Yes, absolutely. It's the same pattern. It's the same pattern which in Chile was said the president must step down, as though all the faults and all the injustices in the world are the fault of the president. And the other thing that I haven't seen as much, but I think is really coming here to the United States, and the reason why I chose to leave Chile was because the president did cave in on one of the demands, which was the people were demanding, the people, I don't know who the people were behind this. I would assume that it was the socialist communists who were demanding a new constitution in Chile. Just in 2005, they had had a referendum and the people agreed with the constitution, and now suddenly they want a new constitution. It was at that point when he agreed to a vote for a new constitution that I could see this was not going to end well, and I didn't see really much of a future if they were going to change the constitution. It was not going to end up being a better one, and especially not if the communists and the socialists were going to be behind it. The thing that surprised me the most was my Venezuelan friends. My Venezuelan friends said, oh my gosh, Leah, this is how we lost Venezuela. We, the people, agreed to a new constitution and we lost our country.
Do you think America might be headed that way if these BLM and anti-police protests and revolutions continue to be unfeathered for months or maybe another year to come?
Absolutely. I think it's going to be harder to convince the U.S. people that their constitution needs changing. But I think they're going that way. They're going to say that it's outdated, it's racist, it was developed by slaveholders, and they're going to turn the people against the constitution. And just like in Chile, the people do not understand enough about their own constitution to protect it. And so they will easily fall into the trap of saying, well, yeah, it's outdated. We need something more modern.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Leah. We, of course, wish you the best, and thank you for sharing this information with us and the American people. God bless.
Great. Thank you.
Carlos Casanova gave us the background of how communists and socialists took over both Cuba and his home country of Venezuela, and how they are again doing so in Chile. Celia Southwell verified that what these protesters are doing in Chile is waging a revolution, and how it parallels the current racial turmoil and unrest we see metastasizing in America. Like in Cuba and Venezuela before, and now in Chile and the US, Marxist-Leninists identify and target what they perceive to be the most vulnerable area and constantly poke at it, in order to divide the people for the purpose of inciting violence and revolution. Next week, we'll look at how leftist leaders use the politics of race and division to create the appearance of popular support. Until then, God bless.